Welcome one and all throughout time and space for this episode of Weebs on the Weekends, the podcast where we break down the anime news highlights of the week and give a retrospective on a look on an anime that premiered 10 years ago. Today's episode, we will cover the news for the third week of August 2022, after which we will give our thoughts on whether to resurrect or rebury the 2012 anime franchise, Good Luck Girl. My name is Sam Martinez. I'm a part-time weeb, full-time RML mechanic, and with me as always is my co-host Jay Johnson, part-time weeb and full-time English language sensei. Now, Jay, I just have to say, after you sent me that Rise of the TMNT clip, I have just been on a TMNT kick. I have been trying to speed through the series so I can watch the movie that recently dropped on Netflix. I've been juggling that with going through Sandman, and I also have to say I felt like I had a real life sort of like a blending of worlds experience. I ran into a person in Sam's Club whose name is Anya, and I now have a headcanon of truth fact that all Anyas like peanuts. And aside from that, I got to see the Dragon Ball Super superhero movie as well. I have some thoughts on that, but we don't necessarily have to go into it. But that's how my week has been. How has your week been?
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I was just thinking, like, you have a club named after yourself, and I was like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, the Spy Family second season, or is it a second core? Second core teaser just dropped, so like, yeah, mm-hmm. That dropped late, yeah, like not even a couple hours ago, but yeah, like within the last hour. And what else for this week? It's been a pretty dull week. Next week is the start of the school year for me, so I'm back into teacher's mode. I'm getting my bow tie straight and ironed and my lab coat pressed.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm kind of back into teacher's mode, so I'm like, oh no, I'm no longer just a casual guy, weirdo that, you know, lives in that building.
The casual weirdos, like, he has a job.
Yeah. It's because, like, you know, a lot of kids play outside during the summer and they're like, oh, hi, American kind of guy. And it's like, yeah, just come out of my house and wave and say hi to the kids. And, like, the adults are like, who's that guy? I was like, yeah, hi. But for this week, I don't think it was a spoiler. But the TMNT, I don't know, does it have like a special name to it, or just TMNT
it's called from Rot. 2020? I just use TMNT as an acronym because it's a really long title. So it's Rot. It's technically Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I'm just saying Rise of the TMNT.
Gotcha. Yeah, because it is so anime, and it's like one of those things that you reflect on being older, is that we are growing up with animators, or now animators have grown up with the influence that we had in our childhood. So,
yes.
Of course, that would be anime. So, like, there was a moment where I think Michelangelo was, like, swinging a building at someone. I was like, oh,
yes.
This is intense. This is anime. I love it. Other than that, yeah, it's kind of a segue into news, probably. But, yeah, like, the box office for Red, the new One Piece movie, has this, like, blown anime movies out of the water. Like, I think it's, like, ranking up there with Demon Slayer or Mugen Train with, like, its opening box office.
Really?
And of course, Instagram has spoiled me to some moments in the movie, but that's okay. But, you know, it's, like, nice to see Shanks in action. It's, like, one of the most, you know, well-requested characters in One Piece to be shown off. And I was like, okay,
we get to actually see him fight instead of just menacingly tell people to shut up and go home.
Yeah, just walking into a party saying, yeah, time to stop the party, guys. But yeah, with the final saga of One Piece wrapping up, or starting now, actually, yeah, because the Wano arc just wrapped up this latest issue, so Shanks is kind of going to be the last emperor to be, you know, showcased off, so it makes sense. So, perfectly time Oda, as always. Anything myself this week? Nothing to report. It's been a very blasé week. Bullet Train came out. And that's like Guy Ritchie action-packed film. It's by the director of Atomic Blonde, I believe, in the second Deadpool movie. So, you know, there's a lot of high expectations for it. But yeah, I'm going to go see that very soon.
Oh, it's funny that you say that. So that is an actual segue into the news, if you want to get into it, because one of our news has to deal with that same director.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So time codes in the description below on to the bit of news. So the director that you mentioned, Chad Stahelski, you mentioned that he directed Atomic Blonde. But he's also known for directing the John Wick films. And it seems like he has been tasked with Sony for making a film adaptation of their hit video game, The Ghost of Tsushima. And there was an article that came out recently that said that Stahelski wants to film the entirety of the movie in Japanese. And you being a cinephile, I sort of wanted to pick your brain on him, because I was talking about this particular bit of news with a coworker of mine who's, honestly, his level of cinephileness, his cinephile expertise, rather, is almost on par with yours. And with his opinion, he believes that the director, Takashi Miike, the guy who did 13 Assassins, he believes that he should be the one to do the Ghost of Tsushima movie. And I sort of wanted to get your thoughts on that, if you had any at all, on whether or not Stahelski was a good pick, and or if they should have gone with a different director for this.
Right, yeah. So there's like two approaches to this. It's like, you take it as the way of telling a Japanese story, which of course it is. But yeah, if you want to tell it through like that kind of cultural lens, then, you know, you always want to put that in the hands of people that know the culture best. And yeah, Chad, I don't want to say his last name, I don't want to mess it up, but the director, yeah, Chad, he's a Chad, kind of did spend, yeah, enough time in Japan that he might has a vibe or, you know, enough cultural knowledge to actually interact, to incorporate it into the movie in an earnest way, because again, that's what you really want to focus on. But I think the other part of it is that this is not ever going to happen.
I think why do you say that?
Because one, Ghost of Tsushima didn't sell that many copies, not in the way of, you know, didn't break even or anything, but it definitely underperformed to what they were expecting, because it was really a very cinematically beautiful game, and it had like a Kurosawa mode and like all these beautiful features to it. You know, what we got later with, not later, but what came out before was, I'm thinking of the From Software game, Shadows Die Twice.
Yeah.
Kind of what Ghost of Tsushima was kind of being sold as. But the other thing that you have to consider with Sony is that they don't do video game movies very well. So, I mean, if you look at Tomb Raider recently, which kind of bombed because it was supposed to have, you know, a couple of installments to it, but no one has. It's kind of just dropped off the billet for Sony movies, as well as the Tom Holland Uncharted kind of failed in the box office as well. So I think it's one of those things of trying to adapt more video games movies, but you're not really succeeding in any meaningful way, or at least in a critical way, that warrants this story being told by a non-Japanese or an even non-Asian person. Even though it's a high impact story with a lot of action, and samurais are not really currently being in the zeitgeist right now, not even ninjas, like no Asian archetypes are really being pressed, except for like Shang-Chi, which, you know, also is not going to come back for a sequel in a while. But
yeah,
when I hear this news story, I'm like, yeah, this is the same thing that we've been hearing with Akira for like two decades now. It's an Asian, yes, story being handled by Hollywood, and it's not going to go anywhere.
No, that's fair. And as you said in this article, Chad mentioned that he was going back and forth from Japan since he was 16. So he definitely has a good exposure to the culture. But there's a difference between, you know, somebody who frequents the culture than somebody who lives the culture, you know? And that's disappointing, because when the game came out, like I ended up buying the game, and
I want to say it got awards too when it came out that year as well. Like, it seemed like it was very well received, at least from my point of view. It seemed as though it did move copies, but one's perspective is not necessarily the same as the numbers, you know? So that is disheartening hearing that, you know, it didn't move as many copies as I thought that it did, because it seems like it was very, very well received. Anybody who played the movie, I say movie mainly because, like, some of the scenes in the game, it's like an actual movie, but people who played the game did enjoy it. But one quick question on this, and then we can move on to another topic, because you live in an area that the antagonist of the games of this game is, you know, it depicts the people in the area that you live in. So do you, I guess, like, in your area, what is the reception of Ghost of Tsushima, or do you know of their opinion of the game at all?
Yeah, I've played, or I've at least talked to some of my students, because I played the video game with them to kind of get a feeling for that sensibility of it, because, again, like, a lot of Mongol history is, you know, Genghis Khan and his conquest of the world, and it's like something, you know, Mongolian people, at least in the modern times, kind of just accept and move on. So it's like they don't really have any tied emotionality to it. So it's like, yeah, we're a country that invaded other countries. So it's not betraying it's not betraying us as bad guys, it's betraying us in how we, you know, our culture was. And as long as they're not trying to vilify it and just try to accurately represent it as something that happened in history, then it's fine through their eyes.
Okay, so I guess, like, in that sort of regard, like, how could you just depict it versus vilifying it? Because, again, like, it's an antagonist. It's hard to vilify something, you know, that is an active invading force. No, it's hard not to vilify an active invading force when they're actively invading you, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, again, like, a lot of, I mean, modern war movies, let's see, 1917 kind of did it in a way that showed both sides being, you know, not, you know, righteous in what they were doing. Like,
at least humanizing the other side.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, doing that both, making sure that both sides are, you know, somewhat seen to be, like, in the right and in the wrong in some ways, but also just letting the military action be the focus. So there's, like, ways to handle it. But, you know, with a John Wick director, I don't think there's going to be much of the story beats or cultural impact to it. So it's like just showing cool fight scenes, and that's kind of where it kind of loses its potency.
It'll be kind of funny. If this movie does get off the ground, I wonder if he's going to do, if he's going to make, like, a bofu, right? Like, in a sense of, like, with John Wick, they made gunfu, where it's like they're shooting and then they're doing, like, all these grappling scenes. I wonder if they're going to do something similar with the bows and arrows, like how I believe it was King Arthur. It was the one that had the actor from Sons of Anarchy in it, where they shot the scenes with them shooting arrows like it was a Call of Duty game. You know, like sort of like modernizing that sort of thing. That would be kind of interesting. But on to other bits of news that we have. It seemed like, looking at my news list, it seems like I've had totally catered everything. Well, not everything, but like 99% of the news to you, Jay. Because the next bit of news that we have is Netflix's schedule of Cyberpunk Edgerunners. So we've mentioned before that with the video game Cyberpunk, that Netflix teamed up with Studio Trigger, and they are making an anime adaptation or an anime story regarding the franchise known as Cyberpunk 2077. And we got word that it will be debuting this year, September 13th, 2022. And I sort of wanted to get your thoughts and opinion on this, because they also gave us a synopsis of the story now, and we find out that it's about a boy who's growing up on the rough side of town, and he's becoming an edge runner, which is known as a mercenary outlaw, which is also known as a cyberpunk. So it seems like they're trying to make the namesake of the TV show actual terms in the franchise. And not necessarily your thoughts on that, but it seemed kind of weird, or seemed kind of 90s, I suppose, that they were doing sort of that. Thoughts and comments on the date of release for this anime adaptation.
Right, because we've talked about this before, that Netflix is really just playing by their own rules. I mean, they're, like, for September 13th, that's literally the end of the broadcasting schedule in Japan. So, like, the fall season for broadcasting in Japan is on the first week of October. So, it's like, yeah, you're coming out with this anime by Studio Trigger. Again, the previous production they did was with Star Wars Visions. And, like, this is kind of their next proper, I think, after Brand New Animals. Or, no, they did SS Daizen
Zenon.
Yeah, thank you. And that came after, came before. But, yeah, it's, like, a weird placement for being its release. And, you know, they're handling JoJo in a very particular way, which a lot of fans aren't really vibing with either. But with the whole cyberpunk thing, I think we, you know, as a video game community, I'm a gamer, but with the gamer community, yes, they have kind of gotten over how bad Cyberpunk is. So I think everyone it's been long enough that people have forgotten how bad Cyberpunk is. So this anime won't have the stink of the video game on it, which, you know, is kind of upsetting because, you know, if the game was as, if it they delivered really like hyped it was up promised, the game, yeah. Right, yeah, if it was delivered that promise, and then the anime would have probably released probably closer to the video game, but they probably distanced themselves long enough. So I'm very excited to actually look into this, because we're not going to talk about it for the fall, and we didn't talk about it for our summer anticipated list either. So it's like right there in the middle. So I'm kind of interested, because with how the game works out, you start off with three classes. You're an edge runner, a corpo working for the corporations, or a nomad that doesn't have any affiliation really. So with them going with the edge runner or cyberpunk class, it's like a singular story within like the wider world of cyberpunk. So it's interesting in that way that they're taking that approach instead of focusing on three main characters in each of the classes. So it's like, okay, cool. I get a slice of this. Next season might be a different class. Next season might be a different class, and then go from there.
Well, if they do another season, it seems like they may be doing a season per class, because they say that this series is supposed to be standalone. So it would be. I also find it interesting too that they being like Netflix are investing in these works that are based off video games, because for instance I have mentioned Arcane before, and Arcane's based off of League of Legends. Now, with League of Legends, there is more of a hard story that you can follow, and the way that they told the story in Arcane was very well done, along with the beautiful animation. And with Studio Trigger, I have no doubt that we are going to get spectacular scenes and spectacular action sequences as well, but I feel as though, like, with the story being as loose and free roaming, they also have more liberties to make new characters and to make stories on their own. Like, they just have to stay within the confines of like what makes an edge runner or what defines a cyberpunk, you know. They just have to stay within the realm, within those realms, and I feel like we were definitely going to be getting a good story. That, at least, like what you proposed, you know, following three different individuals and having their stories like sort of connect, that would have been interesting, and I feel like that would have been more of the Arcane route as well. But I'm still like looking forward to this, and again, like as I'm saying, like the fact that like Studio Trigger is going to get like a lot more free reign in this story, or at least. Am I true in saying that, or is there a hard story in Cyberpunk, regardless of the classes that you choose?
It definitely follows, because Michael Pond is the creator of the Cyberpunk tabletop series, and he wrote it as, you know, basically a Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game. So there is a overarching story to the world and to the city itself. So you can literally just cherry pick individuals in that city. So it's kind of like living in Mega City 1 from the Dread comics. And okay. It's just like a crazy environment, and just randomly pick any civilian and they can be the main character.
Okay, no, that's very interesting. And now that you said it like that, it sort of got me thinking that we may also get some tones that are very similar to, oh my goodness, what's the name of the one Amazon anime that was based off of the Critical Role, off of that Critical Role show?
Vox Machina.
Yeah, Vox Machina. I feel like we, like, now you say that it has like a Dungeons and Dragons feel, we may be getting some of that too. And I feel like nerds are getting a resurgence with all this stuff, because we're also getting a Dungeons and Dragons movie, which is completely insane and thought impossible. But I digress. That's all we really have in regards to, or did you have anything else to say about Cyberpunk Edge Runners before we go on to another piece of news?
I mean, we can talk about it. I mean, if you want to add it to your fall most anticipated, mm-hmm. Because since this will be coming up there, but yeah, segue into talking about The Witch of Mercury if you want, because that comes out this fall.
All right, let's talk about The Witch of Mercury. It seems like you really want to you have some thoughts on that. I know, like, talking about it, we've met, I'm excited for it, but it seems like you're really excited for it, which gets me excited because you're excited. And we have learned that there is a prequel OVA or a prequel special that leads up to the events in Witch of Mercury that has been made and that has been released in Japan. It was debuted in Japan on July 14th at the Gundam factory in Yokohama, the site the life size statue of Gundam Unicorn is actually. It was debuted there, and we also got word that it will be released to everybody outside of Japan on September 1st. Seems like a lot of stuff's happening in September. But I guess, like you said, like that's when the fall season starts, or when the fall's, or when the summer season ends, Jay?
Yeah, the first week of October is the broadcasting start of the season. But, you know, September is that season where everything builds up towards that.
Okay. So, yeah, that sort of makes sense. And they also say that the series will premiere in October during the Nichi 5 slot on Sundays at 5 p.m. And as you said, it will be simulcast and also be presented, or it would start its airing in October. And Jay, you have some thoughts on it, and I'm sure you're biting at the bit to talk about Mercury, The Witch of Mercury. So have at it.
Yes, it is just wild to me that Gundam and Sunrise is making this push across, you know, multiple streaming services. Mm-hmm. One, they're doing the 100-year project with Netflix, so we're probably getting a live adaptation Gundam series next year, or probably the following year. I think it's the 2024. But also that this is also being released on YouTube. Released on Gundam Info, which is their one of their streaming services. But we talked about this maybe 2 years ago when they announced the Gundam project, the 100-year Gundam project, is that they were making efforts to make Gundam more accessible to everyone across the planet, having a lot of their properties translated and dubbed in, you know, proper translation, and then extending the life-size Gundam project overseas to China, and then potentially, I forgot the other country. Oh, France is where the other one's being set up at. But yeah, this is going to be my first Gundam series, and I'm kind of excited that, I'm sorry, my first Gundam series that I will actually have.
That you actively follow.
Intentionally going out of my way to watch, because Gundam Wing, of course, like most 90 kids, were their first series, hopefully. But, you know, this is my first, like, oh yeah, Gundam? I'm going to watch that. Because this is the first one female protagonist series, and it's also the first Gundam in like 7 years. Gundam, Iron Blood Orphans came out in 2015, I believe, like 7 years ago. So it's like,
yes.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. There's a new, I guess, I don't know how we would say it, like maybe a new narrative to tackle the, just the boys in war story, the whole Gundams are war machines when the gender of the main character changes. So I'm very interested to see if they're really taking that to heart, or they're just saying, oh, look at our girl pilot kind of thing, even sideliner. So it's like, how is Sunrise actually going to handle that change, especially like when a lot of media is doing that? So very interested in that. And anything else? No, I think that's it. It's just like, I think this is my number one most anticipated for, oh no, Chainsaw Man. Ooh, sorry, my bad. Not to spoil anyone's list, but yeah, Chainsaw Man comes out this fall as well. Oh, that is going to be tough. I mean, we'll talk about that in a couple episodes.
I feel like you can watch them in tandem if you wanted to.
Yeah, I know, but ranking them is always important.
Oh, yeah, ranking them, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm just super excited.
No, and now that you mention how accessible it will be, just saying what the article is saying, as you mentioned before, it will be the special will be available on YouTube. It will also be available on Hulu, these other streaming services too, that are known as Abema TV, another one being Unext, and a third one that they have listed here called D Anime Store. Oh, that's quite punny of them. The dates that they're going to be released on these services, including Hulu and YouTube, will be on September 4th as well. So I am going to be looking forward to it. And I'm trying to see, they will also be screening the prologue anime at the Comic-Con International in San Diego. Oh, no, it was debuted there in San Diego on July 21st. But I am excited, like you said, because it's going to have like the female female as a protagonist, and we've had strong female characters, excuse me, in the Gundam franchise before, but they were support characters. Like we've had the princess in Gundam Unicorn. We've also had, I believe, I'm trying to remember her name. She was an Indian chick that was in love with Char and Armuro. No, not Armuro, but the main character from the OG Gundam. I think her name was like Lena. Oh my goodness. Ellis is going to hate me for botching those people up. But, you know, it will be interesting to finally get a female character as a protagonist, or a strong female character as a protagonist in this series, and I'm excited to see which way they're going to go with this. And on to our next bit of news, we have news that Skate the Infinity will be getting a second season, as well as some new OVA. And Jay, you reminded me off air that this was your top pick for the year that Skate the Infinity came out. Yeah, in last year for 2021. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the new OVA as well as the season 2.
Gotcha. Yeah, so yeah, Skate the Infinite came out last year. I ranked it very controversially above like Mushoku Tensei, Jaho's Reincarnation.
Yeah.
To Your Eternity, like everything that came out in 2021, even higher than Attack on Titan, the final season. And I was so taken back by this story of just two skater boys learning how to skate. It's like just the shop talk that goes into something, you know. Again, shop talk is one of those things that even if you have no idea what they're talking about, if you have no idea what kind of wheels go on a skateboard or what is the technique, how you shift weight on a skateboard to do certain tricks, they teach you in the show in a way that's not just distancing to audiences, but like, oh, this makes me want to go skate, just like how Haikyuu makes me want to go play volleyball. That's kind of why I call it a sports anime. But it's an original property done by Studio Bones, so it's like beautiful in its animation and the fluidness of like the skateboard moving. So I'm so excited that it got a second season announced because no one's talking about it. It's like, I think it's like one of those animes that no one talked about, but you know, it kind of met enough attention for like marketing and promotional materials. Same thing with like the mangas that got released after the anime because it's an anime original. So I think that just shows that whenever there's an anime original and then they have mangas to follow the story as well as to do sides and spin-offs and other explorations of characters, that kind of shows the industry that, yeah, we need to do a second season. Like, that's a lot of cases that didn't happen with some anime in the past, but I'm like, I'm glad Skate Infinite is not going to be overlooked because it leaves off in a very satisfying way, but one of those ways of, yeah, they can walk into the sunset, but what's over the horizon kind of thing.
I want to see my best boy skate.
because like with any sports anime, there's always a bigger dog. So, you know, they were very much on a local level of a kind of, I don't know how you would say it, like it's like a dangerous skating track, essentially. So like now they could go legit or they could learn to do like the BMX equivalent of skateboarding. So like there's enough to do with the story.
Oh, no, definitely. And I would say like a real life thing that I just realized recently is just like how, because we've talked about it before, how the skills in skateboarding, they translate easily to snowboarding and to surfing. I was with a couple of friends of mine at the beach and we were doing, they called it body surfing, or it's basically like you're running along the shoreline, you drop this boogie board type thing and you run onto it and you basically like surf or you skim along the water along the shoreline as well. And I didn't realize, you know, that your skills needed to skate were translated to that as well. So it was just very interesting, and it made me think about Skate the Infinity. It's like, okay, I need to do this while I'm doing that, and I proceeded to land on my face repeatedly. But onwards to our last bit of news story that we have, and it seems like, as I said before, I had catered all the news to you today, Jay, because we have learned that Psycho Pass will be launching a 10th anniversary project this year, as Psycho Pass will be turning 10 years. And I feel like we had put Psycho Pass on our docket so that we can talk about it, but it's also very interesting that this studio will also be putting out a promotion for the 10th year anniversary. I think it's supposed to be another movie or something along those lines. But Jay, what are your thoughts on that?
Right, because, you know, I remember watching Psycho Pass like it was yesterday, but it was 10 years ago, and I'm old. But yeah, the Psycho Pass property or the franchise has so much to it. Like, it has 3 seasons, it has 3 movies, and now it's coming out with the 4th movie, which is called Providence, essentially. Mm-hmm. So that's what the 10-year celebration is going to be about. But there's also like art gallery openings and exhibitions. There's like special collector items being sold out of their fan shop that's set up in Kyoto, I believe. There is the radio show that's coming back that's being available on Spotify and iTunes. So like there was a radio show? Yeah, oh, most animes have radio shows nowadays. But yeah, Psycho Pass was a very heavily listened and downloaded one. So now it's coming back so people can, of course, you know, re-listen to it. But yeah, it's like such a big celebration for this anime. And yeah, we are covering it in about 2 episodes or 3 episodes because it released in the fall of 2012. But yeah, I'm so excited because it feels so niche to like Psycho Pass because how dark and psychological it is. Like, I didn't know a lot of people enjoyed it as much, but you know, it has like these seasons and movies, so it makes sense now. But like when you're watching it 10 years ago, it was like, yeah, no one else is going to like this body horror, psychological murder mystery kind of story. So I'm glad after 10 years that it's getting this proper due. And you know, Production IG does so much good work and it's an original property. So it's like, yeah, completely earned. We all love it.
No, and they in the article too, they mentioned like how much love the fans have gotten, and it seems like a lot of the stuff that's going on, you as you said, the the cafe and the tour in the loft campaign that they're doing. Like, it's all just, all this promotion is just to show gratitude for the fans, you know, all the love that they've been getting throughout the past 10 years. So I'm very excited to see what the fourth movie is going to be about, because I think it was you and Gerard. It was either you or the two of you in tandem that sort of pushed me to go and finish Psycho Pass, because I've only ever seen the first season, and I really enjoyed the third season. So I'm looking forward to seeing what else they're going to be giving this franchise. So with that, we will be concluding the news, and we will be going on to the anime of the hour. Good luck, girl. And again, time code in the description. And for those of you watching on YouTube, excuse me, if you want to listen to the entire track and see what type of news that we talked about, maybe go on to the cool streaming services such as Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Find us there and see what cool news that you have missed, because we definitely talked about some pretty cool news. But enough about that. On to the anime. And Jay, you have the breakdown of this week's anime?
Yes, I do. And actually, it's not even a anime we chose. This is a anime that our mutual friend Alonzo, who has guest starred on, two episodes now with us, has talked about this anime. And he's like, yeah, you need to watch this. So it's very much a surprise, because the main lead, or at least it's a dual main lead character story of Momiji, or Momiji, and her look is so iconic. And I was like, who is that girl? And I was like, oh, it's like one of those things, like revisiting a property that, like, you've always seen the image of a character bleed into the culture, but you never saw where that character is from. So yeah, Momiji is like the god of misfortune or poverty, depending on how you read the kanji. But her look is like, she has like these giant poofy pigtails, twin pigtails. She has like a green and gold checkered shirt. She has like a red suspender dress. And then also her right arm is cast in bandages. So,
yes,
you know, it's kind of an iconic look, but I never knew where she was from. But this is a property that extends from a manga, Good Luck Girl. It ran from 2008 to 2013. I watched it on Funimation. Did you watch it on Funimation?
I watched it on Funimation.
Okay, yes. Cool. So I didn't know where else to find it. So again, these 10-year properties are sometimes hard to find.
Let's see, because it seems like Funimation and Crunchyroll, but they're practically the same now. So
Yeah, Funimation bought them out. Yeah, for sure.
I feel like we should call it a name like Crunchy Fun or something like that.
Crunch Nation. But yeah, it's a Studio Sunrise production, which again is like wild.
That was surprising.
Yeah, that is, because Sunrise known for Gundam, but like we talked about a couple times that they do extend into like slice of life, comedy, supernatural stuff as well. But it's 13 episodes in total. I listened to the dub. And did you listen to the dub?
Yes, I did. Okay, cool. I saw a couple clips in the sub, so I can show like the difference between the two. But I have to say, like with the dub, they did a really good job in translating, or at least making sure that Western audiences can appreciate the humor a lot more.
Because the dub is wild. So this premiered back on July 4th, 2012. So we're a little bit behind on the 10-year anniversary. But the basic story is that Ichiho, or Ichiko, is basically blessed with, like, basically god-level or godly luck. So she's unknowingly absorbing luck from her surroundings and from other people. And the god of misfortune is sent to basically steal her luck back, or to like lessen her powers. And again, that's a really basic premise. Like, it's a very basic supernatural comedy premise to it. It's like, oh, this girl is super lucky, God comes down to intervene kind of thing. So two main leads. And the thing I want to say about this most is that I'm so concerned with the type of comedy that this is, because
why?
I did not know it was so pervasive in the anime community to make so many parodies of other shonen titles. It's like, mm-hmm. we reviewed Beelzebub like 2 years ago. Beelzebub, we just recently did Kami-sama Kiss and Gintama, I think, came out this year as well. And I was like, this type of comedy that parodies Dragon Ball Z in some kind of way, or mm-hmm. there's also, what was the other thing? I think it was Gundam. Was that the first scene where...
Yeah, I think so. Like, with Sunrise and the first few episodes, they have to put something in Gundam colors just right. so that you know that it's Sunrise.
Right. I didn't know if it was Galactic Heroes or Gundam, because their uniforms kind of look similar to me. But yeah, they parody, like, Gundam or Galactic Heroes, and the humor is so... It's so, like, sexually charged, and it's just... There's a perverted monk in the second episode. Yeah. The running gag of it is that the main heroine is like big breasted and the goddess is like flat chested. So like that's kind of their dynamic, always poking mm-hmm. fun at each other. It's like, haha, your boobs are so big, haha, your boobs are so small. But it's like that kind of humor resonates through so much anime I've seen in the past or when I was growing up. It's like, revisiting it now, I didn't find it funny at all. So, mm-hmm. like, it's, like, juvenile in its humor. But, you know, it's just everywhere. But, Sam, how are your initial feelings about this?
Like, just going off on that, and it was funny, too, because, as you said, like, with the girls poking at each other because of their boob size, it's just, like, the way they did it, it was... Like, if dudes joked around, like, say, it's funny, because, like, whenever I was around Gerard, I would always, like, poke a little fun at how tall he was, right? And, you know, just, like, how dudes joke around a little bit, like, it's, you know, you're putting them down, but it's done in an endearing sort of way. But with women, I don't really know how women joke around with each other, right? So it's just like, whenever we have jokes like that, it's like, is that something that women really do? Or is this just the type of jokes that men think that women make about themselves, because that's how men joke around, right? It's like, oh, we joke around all the time like this, so women are going to do that too. It's like, that's not necessarily true. And like, sometimes, like, it can be funny, but then it just, like, they beat you over the head with it. It's like, okay, the first time it was kind of funny. It's like, the second time is like, you're trying to force it into a gag, and, like, the fact that, like, they would revisit it, it's, I mean, later on in, like, the, like, episode 3, when they start talking about, like, more serious stuff, like, the humor is there, and it's not as in your face as it was in the first two episodes, like in regards to like the boob size and things like that. But so like, it seems like as time goes on, like they do ease up on it, but it was just, like you said, it was just sort of in your face about it. Because I mean, like, when Poverty God first gets a picture of Ichiko, you know, she makes a comment to herself. It's like, oh, she's totally lucky because of the size of those melons. It's like, okay, that's kind of believable, right? Because, like, first impressions. And then to go and to talk, you know, to comment about those, about the boobs in front of her, in person continuously, it's like, okay, this is kind of weird. But again, like, there's other, forms of comedy that they do, in it as well. And, just to touch back a little bit on the news stuff that we talked about, or at least not necessarily the news, but the poking at other franchises, as you mentioned, like with the English, one thing that the show does later on, and Alonso showed me this like some time ago, where, you know, they poke fun at some of the other anime franchises, and there's one scene where they do poke fun at One Piece, and it's just funny because the English voice actor that they have for the Poverty God is the same voice actor that they have for Luffy. So, and in the English dub, you hear that Luffy accent come out a couple of times, you know, whenever she's trying to be aggressive. And I feel like, you know, because of that, like, they're able to play along with that a lot more. And it was just funny hearing that. And so I went and I looked at some of the other actors, or at least the actor for Ichiko, to see if there was a similar thing. It turns out the English voice actor for Ichiko was Tony Chopper. So they've worked with each other in One Piece before. And with the Japanese voice actors, the Japanese voice actor for Poverty God was Rudeus from Jobless. And the Japanese voice actor for Ichiko was Akane Tsunamori from Psycho Pass. And so, like, that's one thing that I found that was kind of interesting, you know, to see, especially, like, for Akane, seeing her voice acting chops going from something that's super serious to something that's supposed to be lackadaisical and fun. But, like, those were sort of my thoughts on it. But it's pretty wild in terms of energy. It's high octane, but it's a different type of high octane than Kamisama Kiss. Would you say that I'm correct in saying that, or am I off base?
No, it's definitely the same kind of humor. That's why I kind of brought it up before, because there is this type of, well, to say it's upfront about it is so blatant when you look at the first title of the first episode. Did you make mention, did you notice what the title of the first episode was?
No, I totally didn't. What it was.
So they have ridiculously long titles, but the first episode title is, "You call yourself a god, but aren't you less of a god of misfortune and more of a god of flat chest?"
Yes.
She says that in the episode. So just to say up front, it's like, yeah, that's going to be the running gag. And of course, that's going to be kind of the dynamic of the two, because the other thing that's amazing about the series, or at least the first three episodes, because we give it the first three episode test, is that the main girl is a terrible person. It's like, that's not fair, but she
she's terrible. She is very pampered and she feels entitled.
Yeah, but more than that is that she's just spoiled. I guess that's the word I was looking for, because her luck, she's naturally lucky, so she thinks that is completely earned, but it's not. It's just like, I was born lucky. But she definitely vibes into it more, because it's like active, godly intervention, almost essentially kind of luck. Because not only is the part of she's lucky, but also she causes misfortune to others. And we see that in the second or the third episode when she goes to visit like a potential boyfriend's family. She basically drains, even in the first episode, the reason she kind of has a silver lining to her personality is because, one, her butler falls ill, and the misfortune god explains, like, yeah, you've been in this person's life for so long and now they're suffering like a critical medical condition because they've been your butler for so long. And she's like, then I need to reverse this damage I'm doing to the world. And she's like, okay. And the god drains the luck from her, but then she takes the luck and then splashes it on the butler, essentially, or gives it to the butler, and the butler is healed. And it's not like she did she did a good thing, but then she immediately goes back into being who she is. It's not like a situation of, I need to stop causing misfortune to the world. She's like, yeah, misfortune happens. It's not my problem. I don't have a duty or responsibility to make other people, you know, benefit from my misfortune. So it's a very weird stance to take from a heroine and then also make it a comedy. So, like, the comedy's up front. The supernatural stuff is pretty up front, because in the first episode, you have the draining of the luck. In the second episode, you have the perverted priest that basically gives her a talisman to basically conjure her luck as like spirit fighting animals, essentially.
Or yeah, manifestor. Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because this has to do with that translation stuff that I had mentioned earlier. So I just like relooked at that scene, and the staff helps her manifest her people, manifest her luck as spirits to help her in the fight. And the thing is, like, it takes on, like, her personality traits, right? So, like, they are headstrong and they are clear in direction. Whereas, and the poppy god, she does the same thing with hers, but because she's a god, like, she can manifest, like, several different people. And they end up just being wandering, aimless zombies, right? And who are lazy and don't want to do anything, and they act like they can't hear the poverty god giving her orders, right? And it's just funny because in the translation, like in the Japanese translation, they, you know, the poverty god's like, you can't come crying to me now that I've done this. It's like, you've brought this upon yourself, right? That sort of thing. Whereas in the Funimation dub, it's so hilarious. The poverty god is like, you're about to be effed in the A with a whole bag of D's. Like, that's literally their translation. And it's just, it makes the scene, like, that much more enjoyable. And it's just, like, that level of translation skills that I really appreciate from the Funimation crew.
Right, because it has this very freeform way of something similar to Ghost Stories. Ghost Stories is kind of famous for that kind of leisurely way of translation. So that's why I mentioned the dub in the very beginning, because I was like, this feels very American. We saw this like with High School of the Dead, because like they kind of took that approach to it as well. It's like putting American iconography or verbiage into scenes where you wouldn't with the translation if it was just like a one-for-one translation. But yeah, like, so like that's a lot of the humor that you can get from it. It's like American vulgarness to it out of a Japanese property like that. And it's like very maybe refreshing, I don't know, but it's like unique to the other Gintama and like Beelzebub kind of parallels to it. But the other thing that I wanted to mention from at least the first three episodes is that there's a black character, or at least a character of color, which I was not expecting. Yes. And even so, more so because it's not stereotypical, what's the word, cartoonish. Well, the kind of, I'm forgetting what the terminology for minstrel show kind of design to it that a lot of Japanese animations have.
He didn't look like Mr. Popo.
Right. Mr. Popo. I think there's a character in, Hunter x Hunter does people of color outstandingly well. I'm not thinking about, Mr. Popo, obviously Jinx is another example, but that's a Pokemon. But yeah, and he's a pervert and is like, and I don't know how he was talking to, he talks about his mama, like he uses the word mama when he's talking about his mother, and I'm like, bruh, I know this guy. It was just really funny that that was the characterization they gave him, like typical black guy voice. And I don't think it's Lamar Burton who voiced him.
It's not a black guy. I looked him up before. I don't sound have like him here in front of me.
His voice was very noticeably, like, you know, quote unquote black. So I was like, okay, cool. His character design was pretty standard. He was a Shinto priest in like the garb and not using like urban language at all. It was just like he sounds black, you know, again, quote unquote black.
I guess like just like tonally and with some of his inflections, pretty much.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Yeah. Look at me not being an English teacher talking about tone of voice. But yeah, it was like, it just like caught me out of surprise because like he's portrayed as like just a wandering shaman or a Shinto priest. And he's like, oh, house me, feed me, clothe me.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And she eventually, you know, gives in, or he kind of stalks her. But he also like physically assaults her in some scenes, like just touching her boot. It's not even physical assault, but it's like just a lot of casual borderline activity. Like he's rubbing against her leg and sniffing her bras and panties. And it's like, what is going on?
I just brought up the voice actor. It's Patrick Seitz. And he's known for voicing Dio Brando and Frankie from One Piece. Bro, we have like the entire One Piece crew here.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. I mean, that happens. Yeah, I mean, having that like that concentration is very odd. But yeah, weird. But yeah, it was like weird characters. And I even watched the fourth episode because, sorry, don't want to go too far outside the three episode test that we give. But like in the third episode, there's a masochistic dog character and he gets tied up with, you know, the Japanese BDSM rope tying technique, and I'm like, okay, this anime is off the chain for 13 episodes. It's again like we talked about the anime Yoru Yori, which was
about schoolgirls,
right? Yeah. Schoolgirls, but also schoolgirls being in love with each other. It's like, where do some of these animes hide in the culture? It's like Alonzo. It's like, again, it's like one of those things of like, oh, your recommendations tell me more about your taste than I think you're meaning to. You're meaning to tell.
Come on. Don't do that. He's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when he comes on later this year. But to wrap up the 3-episode test, I think it very much falls into the I've seen this before kind of category. And it's like, again, I'm saying, like, this is exactly like Beelzebub with the naked baby, and like sometimes his clothes get ripped off and whatever. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Gintama doing a lot of parody work and slapstick work, as you see in like Kamisama Kiss and other comedy of this show. So like strong elements of comedy with the dialogue specifically, and then the supernatural elements are not too supernatural, so it's not as informed as like Kamisama Kiss that dealt with like yokai and like Japanese monsters. But I'm going to say that it passed the 3-episode test.
Okay.
Yeah, because like, you know where the story is going. Like, there's not gonna be some great antagonist. It's just a normal slice of life, supernatural kind of romp of humor. It's like, yeah, she's gonna drain her luck sometimes, but again, immediately in the second episode, you're like, oh, she just doesn't have to do it once. She has to do it repetitively, essentially. Yeah. So that's just gonna be the course of the show. So it definitely sets up enough strong characters. You get the dynamic, you get the sense of comedy, you get the sense of pacing as well with the show. So I think it passes the 3-episode test.
So as far as passing, but what about revival reburying?
Okay, so yeah, let's get to that then. So in our decisions between to resurrect, meaning to we're going to finish the series essentially, or to rebury it, meaning that we're not going to watch past 3 episodes, that I'm going to say it's reburied. Because of everything I just said, essentially. Because it's just humor that I've seen before, maybe humor I've grown out of. And it's also written in a way of not being entertaining to me anymore. Because again, comedy is maybe the most subjective genre that if it doesn't vibe with you, if you don't laugh. I didn't laugh at all during these 3 episodes. I kind of chuckled.
Really?
It's like, okay. Yeah. I get it kind of thing. It's like, oh, I would have laughed at this maybe 20 years ago, but not now. But yeah, it's kind of that case for me that it's just like comedy I don't find entertaining anymore. But it was a good time. I like that she's not a good guy. I like that she's spoiled and rotten, that she has a lot of character to her, that she is like capable of doing good things, but she is entitled, spoiled. She has like 3 dimensions to her in that kind of way. So yeah, it's like good characters, good dialogue. Funny stuff if you like this kind of comedy, but for me, it's not a hit. So I'm going to rebury it. But how about you?
So, like, for me, I agree with you. It does pass 3 episodes. And I would go as far to say, like, I see, like, the end of the anime. I would have to ask Alonzo because I believe he's seen the entirety of it. But it's, as you said, like, with her luck continually comes back. So it seems like near the end, they would have to basically have Poverty God be her perpetual roommate, so that, because as you mentioned earlier, she gets luck from those around her, and because Poverty God gives off bad luck, the fact that she's near her would probably help even that out, you know, and that's in that regard. So, and we also see the impact of each other's care on both their characters on each other. We see Poverty God being more determined to do her duty, whereas in the beginning of the show, she's shown as lackadaisical, she's lazy, she doesn't want to do anything. And with Ichiko, because, you know, God is coming in and messing up her world, she's having to view things differently. We see her begin to appreciate other people who are less fortunate than her and begin to learn from her experiences with them. And even in the 3rd episode, we see her go out of her way to actively save somebody that earlier in the episode she detested. So we do see positive impacts from both characters. However, as far as resurrection or reburying, I'm glad that you mentioned reburying because I was sort of on the fence. This comedy was very similar in high octane as Kamisamakis and as Working or Wagneria. But for some reason, I vibed with those a little bit more. At first, I thought it was in Kamisamakis, the storyline is a lot stronger, right? There is a bit more of a goal. However, as far as something that's a little bit more aimless, Wagneria was just as aimless, but I feel myself being drawn to Wagneria to watch it a little bit more and to digest the sort of episodic comedy that's in there. I'm not saying that Good Luck Girl is not good, but as far as recommending it to others, it's definitely a desired or an acquired taste. And I would say, like, I would watch it in my spare time, maybe. I don't, as far as finishing it, I'm not entirely sure if I would do that. So that's why I would sort of rebury it, because, like, I've seen, as we said before, we've seen this in other anime, and I've seen it done a little bit better. Now, it is fun, and maybe, as you said before, like, our tastes in comedy do change. Maybe I'm not watching this at the time that I should have been, if to truly appreciate it. But it's fun, but I wouldn't necessarily resurrect it either. You know, just like you. I mean, Jay, do you think like that was a bit of a shock to you, or no?
No, it makes sense, because again, It's one of those things of like how subjective comedy is and how like these properties can wear over time. So like we talk about, you revisit after 10 years, it's because like 10 years can change a person, or 10 years can change the meaning behind the property. And again, maybe even watching it in the sub, maybe the dub actually did a disservice to it, actually, in the way of like how Americanized. Why do you say that? Oh, because okay. Like what you were talking about being that it was so comedic, but maybe it changed too much of the comedy that was intended for the scene. So maybe even the sub would have made it better in my viewing of it. So I'm not sure if I'll go back to watch the three episodes again in the sub, but sure it was definitely a stylized choice to make like that of the joke that you said, like
F'd in the A with a whole bag of D.
Yeah, which I think I've heard before, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think I've heard that joke before. But yes, definitely feels very American humor, vulgar humor, like a Seth Rogen or a Seth MacFarlane kind of vibe. So wonder when this was, I mean, 2012 would be like the height of Family Guy. So wonder.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If they were attached to that. But yeah, there's a lot of cute things about the series as well. There's like a little Frankenstein little familiar that goes around with the God of Misfortune that does a lot of side skits to make the background of a scene like a lot more comedic as well. So again, the slapstick nature of things, but a lot of impressions and caricatures of things. So like there's enough going on to make it interesting, but again, passes the three episodes, but reburied. I'm not watching this over anything I'm watching currently. So yeah, so that's Good Luck Girl, also known as This Poverty or This God of Poverty. I think it's like,
yeah, Bimbo Kamika. It's weird because it's Gami instead of Kami.
So. Right, yeah, so it's like a play on God, the word for God, but like the wrong way to play it. It's like already a funny riddle kind of thing. So yeah, that is Good Luck Girl.
Exactly, and who knows, I might actually, like what you said, like with the translation choice being a thing, I might go back and rewatch it in subs just to see what my opinion on it would be then, because I feel as though it's not trying as hard to be funny. But again, that is our review with both of us. It has passed the three episode test, and we both decided on a rebury. Oh my goodness, it's been a while since we've decided on the resurrection or reburying. Again, that is our view and our take on Good Luck Girl, or otherwise known as Bimbo Kamika. And if you would like to continue to follow us as we try to wrap up this summer season, we will be wrapping it up with a sequel movie that will give The Godfather 2 a run for its money, as we are talking about Berserk the Golden Age Arc 2, The Battle for Dotry. Now, Jay, what have you got for us today?
All right. So as this episode or as this series was about luck, I thought I might read some of the fortunes that you might receive during the New Year celebration of Lunar New Year in Japan. So, like, it's a very common tradition to visit a shrine for New Year's, and you pull slips from the shrine that either are misfortunes or fortunes for the year. So,
misfortunes might, too?
Yeah. You might have bad luck for a year.
And then you have to come back.
And you have to come back to correct it. So, yeah. So,
that's how they get you.
Yeah. God blessed you with bad luck this year. Come back in here. So there are usually four types. So there's like your standard luck, your good luck, and then your divine luck. So there's four in total, but I just gave us the good one. So to our listeners, Gene, Sam, may your wishes come true. That's one. May you have peace wherever you go. That's two. May you have smooth sailing. That's three. May you be lucky as you desire.